We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What is everybody and welcome to the All-NBA Show, part of the All-City Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam Montes, and I'm joined once again by my esteemed colleague, Tim Legler. Legs, what an eventful week. A Game 7 and a really action-packed Game 1 over the weekend. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, this is going to be a great second round, man. We're one game into the second round. Three series haven't started yet in the second round. But first, we had to get through a Game 7, and that was an interesting series because you went into a Game 7 with no road team having won. And that's what we were waiting on. Is somebody going to crack the code here? And the Magic looked like the start that they were going to be able to pull it off. But eventually, lack of, I think, help for Paolo Banchero ultimately did them in. And then the Cavs move on. And now we got the conference semifinal set up.
Yep, we got a Game 7. And you're right, in that series, no two teams played good at the same time. Yeah. Not even game by game, but even quarter by quarter. It was a really weird series. But we're going to break all that down, also talk about what the Magic need, evaluate their season. You know, in what ways was it a success, and in what ways do they need to take the next step next year? We're also going to preview the Knicks and the Pacers. And, of course, we're going to start with the Nuggets and the Timberwolves. But first, All-NBA is sponsored by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. All right, our top story today, though. Game one against between the Timberwolves and the Denver Nuggets. We both thought this could very well be the two best teams going head-to-head. That's the kind of talent they have. And this game lived up to the hype. It was an extremely well-played game, I thought, by both teams. It was a game one. There was some fumbling. There was some, you know, guys not showing up, this or that. But I thought the intensity, the execution, there was some really exciting things in it. But nobody shined brighter than Anthony Edwards, who went for 43 points on 17 of 29 shooting. He was the story for me in game one because you knew Denver didn't have a natural matchup for him. But KCP, the guy that you think you're going to stick on to him, seemed to make no impact. That, to me, is headline number one of this series. Anthony Edwards is very comfortable with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope guarding him, so much so that I'm not sure the 43 points were even lucky. Legs, I feel like he did what he's naturally going to do against a defender that is too small for him. What do you think?
This was my concern going in. I talked about this actually of Van Pelt breaking down the series and stuff to look for. Ultimately, I always got back to Jokic being the answer for like everything. Like, well, Jokic will make up for that. But this was one of the concerns because KCP's too small. And the bigger guys, your forwards, Porter Jr., Aaron Gordon, they're just not going to be laterally quick enough to stay with him on his – he gets into these combination moves off the dribble where he then elevates off of multiple dribble moves to get into his jump shot, and there's just no way. Aaron Gordon is an elite-level defender. It's almost not fair to ask him to have to guard a guy that's got good size, that is that quick, and can elevate like that off the ground at the end of the day to get into his jump shot. I mean, Aaron Gordon has to give him a certain amount of cushion, and he's going to be contesting everything late. And I just felt like Anthony Edwards was not bothered by it. KCP's too small. I actually think The guy that fits the best physical profile to guard him in this series that's going to get minutes is Christian Brown, because he's got better size, he's strong, he's a good athlete, and you're not as worried also about like him picking up fouls or anything else. So that might be the matchup that at least, you know, gives you a better chance initially against Anthony Edwards. You're not going to guard players like this by yourself, clearly. It's about a game plan and sending them to help and how you're going to do that and making sure the help is there. But it does matter who's on the guy initially in terms of, so he can't get into something quick and rise up and score over what's in front of him. And I thought he did that, man. He put his chest on KCP a couple of times when he would go into a semi back down and then boom, bump him, lean back and just rise up. And it was like, literally, like you said, unaffected by anything KCP was throwing at him. It was definitely something I mentioned, it's something I was concerned about for the Nuggets going into the series, and it definitely played out that way in the first game.
So right off the top, we're going to talk about matchups for him. First of all, I was very impressed with Anthony Edwards. I mean, we talked about, you go from having the talent and having the skill to understanding how to apply it properly. Yeah. Now we'll see as Denver makes adjustments, you know, if he continues to do that. But in game number one, he seemed to understand exactly what spot was his in this series. When KCP's guarding him, get to the middle of the floor, get physical with him to get him off of you a little bit and get to that 10 to 15 foot range. Yeah, well, not the easiest shot, but a shot that he's very comfortable with in that moment. If he can create that little separation and get a 10 foot fall away, he's very comfortable with it. And if you look at his shot chart, he was a mid-range assassin. The three-pointers, 3 of 7, you know, you're going to make that. That's a good shooting night from him. There's not a whole lot you can do about it. But how comfortable he was getting to his spots, to me, is the key. And so one of the questions is, so KCP, if you take him off, KCP is a two-way player. Even if he's not making threes, you guard him as if he makes threes every time. Christian Brown is not. I think that he can guard Anthony Edwards better. I think he does have that physical profile you're talking about. Anthony Edwards is still going to score, but he can make it a little bit harder. But do you, whatever you gain defensively with him, do you lose it by having Christian Brown on the floor and not having KCP in the corner?
I mean, a little bit. I understand what you're saying about spacing, but let's be real about it. KCP played 37 minutes. He took 4 shots. I mean, he was 2 for 4 from the 3. So it's not like you're talking about a significant loss to your offense. Christian Brown also, by the way, knocked down a 3. I know it's not his wheelhouse, and he did make a big shot in the game. He's more of a slasher, you know, weak side cutter, that kind of thing. And maybe there'll be some opportunities there to get that. I don't know that it's that big of a loss. I understand what you're saying. Spacing is definitely better with KCP on the court, particularly when he's in the corners. It's just different how you have to view them. But he wasn't getting loose either. And he's just flat out not big enough or strong enough to guard Anthony Edwards, to where Anthony Edwards can get to his mid-range against him anytime he wants. And then you hope that he misses. That's what it's going to come down to, because it won't be affected by him. You're just going to hope that he has an off night. He certainly didn't in game one. I mean, he was great early, and then he was really good late when he had to be. And like you said, the thing area that he's come the farthest, Anthony Edwards, since last year, since even earlier this year, I think, is his ability to utilize multiple dribble moves to set up what he wants to get or to counter what you do well defensively on his first move. I think he used to be a guy who would commit to a move and go no matter what, even if you played it pretty well. Now, that ability to stop, start again, change hands, like you saw the move he put on Aaron Gordon when he went right hand to left between his legs and then back to that crossover. And by the way, that was kind of like
one of the
tight
best of the year.
Michael Porter Jr. was standing right there in the corner. I almost felt like Michael Porter Jr. could have put his hand up from where he was and contested that by the time he shot it. And he was kind of matched up, I think, with Jade McDaniels in the corner. He was kind of like, you know, staying home. Might have been Nikhil Alexander-Walker, one of those two. But it was like kind of like a tight window. And Anthony Edwards knew exactly how he wanted to set him up, man, to create that space. And that's what I was talking about earlier. Like, Aaron Gordon is a great defender. Aaron Gordon is a big dude. So that little bit, that nanosecond it takes him to shift his weight to react to a crossover is more than enough time for Anthony Edwards to get off a clean shot. And So I think the refinement he's added to his game and the consistency with which he is making that mid-range jump shot, that's now why Anthony Edwards is looked at in a different way than he was prior to this. He's making that shot regularly, and he's so athletic. He can get it when he wants. And if you press up, he can get by you, obviously, and finish at the rim in spectacular fashion. So look, he delivered the goods, man. And I know everybody's kind of like scared for Denver right now. And I think to myself, well, look what it took from Anthony Edwards. Look what it took from Naz Reid. Denver was really, I thought, played very well in large portions of this game. There's some things they got to clean up. And if it took that much from Anthony Edwards and that much from Naz Reid, I think Denver, all in all, it probably feels decent about themselves if they tweak some of the coverage on Anthony Edwards and figure out a way to get the ball out of his hand or give him some different looks defensively where he's not getting off that many shots in his wheelhouse.
I mean, I agree that the margins on this are super close. I mean, that's how it's going to be. I don't think this was a Wolves dominant performance, but at the same time, you win game one and you steal home court. It's the best possible scenario to set yourself up. To go back to Anthony Edwards here, the 43 points, I'm just not sure. You know, you said it was a big game from him. I'm not sure he's not going to have another 40-point game in the series. In fact, if I were betting, I would bet he has another one because of what a hard time Denver has figuring out who to put on him. There's not a natural guy to put there. We'll see if Christian Brown makes an impact. But also because the pick and roll, Denver seems content to allow Anthony Edwards to score from the mid-range. I think you need to keep him off the line. You have to keep him out of transition, and you have to keep him away from the rim. But if you start to try to trap or bring guys or oversell on Anthony Edwards up, you know, when he turns the corner and pick and roll, you're going to start giving up Gobert dunks. You're going to start giving out kick out threes. And I think that's when the game can spiral from you. Denver, I think, and Michael Malone even referenced this at the podium yesterday in his media availability, they believe they can survive Anthony Edwards scoring 43 points. They can't survive Naz Reid also scoring, Mike Conley not missing a shot in the second half. Carl Anthony Towns had a nice run in the third quarter. That's what they can't survive. And I think I agree with that in large part because they don't have an option on Anthony Edwards. So your best bet is to go away from him. So what do you think about that strategy of, hey, he might average 35 a game in this series, but Denver can win if they close everything else off?
I don't think that's, yeah. I mean, I kind of, there's a lot there that I agree with. And I look at the, you know, the individual burst that Minnesota got in this game that determined it. Edwards was great early. Then Carl Anthony Towns was tremendous at the start of the second half. It was like his run there, the first 6 minutes of the third quarter, was all Carl Anthony Towns. Then you had Mike Conley. It's like late third, early fourth. Like he strung together shots. And then Naz Reid with what he did late in the game. So you had all these mini individual runs by guys on Minnesota. And Anthony Edwards good throughout the game, obviously. So I hear you. What I'm saying is, do you look at Jaden McDaniels, you look at Nickeil Alexander-Walker, you know, those guys played 62 minutes. They were 2-for-13. McDaniels was 0-for-7 from the field. They were 1-for-7 combined from the three. I'm not saying that they were affected by the pressure or anything else. I don't know. One game sample size, I don't know. But I do know this. I might have to explore that a little bit if I'm Mike Malone. And if there are opportunities to get the ball out of Anthony Edwards' hands, and that means you don't, where you're not recklessly running at guys at the three-point line, where you allow the inside stuff as that next phase of the offense, or attack a closeout guy, get into the paint, and now Gobert gets a lob dunk. But you rotate sort of half-heartedly toward these guys to see if they can make shots. I don't think right now that's out of the question. If I watch the film on that and I say, you know, hey, Jaden McDaniels, you know, he really picked it up offensively the second half of the year. Nickeil Alexander-Walker, too. These guys are two-way players, but they didn't look super comfortable shooting the ball in the first game. Maybe that's something we explore. I'm not saying where it's a straight-out blitz on Anthony Edwards to start the game, where you're treating him, you know, like that, where at all costs the guy's not allowed to get a shot. No, I don't say you do that. These mid-range contested shots, you say that's still a tough shot in basketball, probably the toughest shot. Let him keep making those to a certain extent. But if you get opportunities on a ball screen, sometimes to blitz that and get the ball out of his hand before he gets either a switch or he comes off with some space and comfortable, and see if those guys can knock down some shots in the first half, I think it's something you want to explore selectively to force other guys to make shots for this team.
I think if you even just look at the fourth quarter, it was a tie game. The thing that broke it open, two Naz Reid three-pointers. Those are the plays that really kill you. So I think Denver, you know, was very close to containing with that exact strategy, going off and shutting everything else down. If we go to the other side, though, the number one storyline to me is Anthony Edwards is going to have a great series. I just would be surprised if Denver was able to slow him down. Now the question is, can they impact the game without that? But the other side of that is Jamal Murray. We're six games into the playoffs. He has yet to have a great game. He has two game winners, but he continues to look sluggish, to look slow. He was a minus 22 in this game, shot just 6 of 14. And the 14 shots is as concerning almost as the fact that he only made 6 of them. He wasn't able to get free. And there were multiple possessions where he got bottled up by Anthony Edwards, Nikhil Alexander-Walker. You know, he's been injured. He's been banged up. He has that calf strain. He was questionable even going into the game. He's questionable for game two. He's obviously going to play through this injury. But that's the other thing that can really tilt the series. Jamal, 17 points, 4 assists, was not an impact player in this game offensively. And defensively, I think Mike Conley kind of realized in the second half that he can't move laterally and started attacking him. And that's how they generated so many kickouts in the second half for open three-point shots. That's my other big concern. Jamal Murray does not look like he can guard or score at the rate that Denver probably needs for them to put pressure in their traditional way. And I'm not sure what you do about that other than he has to figure out a way to make an impact differently.
Well, I think if you're, you know, going to sell that Denver's in real trouble here and they're going to lose this series, that's where you would go. How Jamal Murray looked, his lack of separation ability, because against this team and these defenders with the length that they have, the athletic ability that they have to recover, you need to separate with a little bit of a burst. When you come off a dribble handoff or a ball screen, whatever it may be, you got to get a little bit further away from where that screen was set than you would against most teams, because the closing ability of Jaden McDaniels and Anthony Edwards is exceptional. And so if you're limited in your burst and that little extra acceleration to get a few feet further away before you plant to go up, that's a problem for Jamal Murray. He clearly, you know, was not a factor at all offensively in the first half. He played much better in the second half, and he got to his spots and he made shots. But at no point did it look like he was full throttle, to your point. And that's hard, man. That's hard against this team. This is the best defensive team in the league for a reason. They've got length in the perimeter. They've got size waiting for you at the rim. So you've got to be on point and feeling great and to separate with a burst and then get off the ground when you need to and get rid of the ball quickly. It all looked like a problem for Jamal Murray. I'm much less worried about him on the defensive end of the floor, because – at the end of the day, Mike Conley's not going to beat you in this series. And you can put him on some of these other guys that are role players that are spotted up most of the time if you want and hide him on possessions. You're going to find a way to protect Jamal Murray defensively. I'm not worried about that end of the floor. He has to give them, you know, that electric scoring ability on the other end of the floor in this series to help Jokic. Because Jokic looked like he was working to death to get what he got. 25 shots to get his number. He's got to be way more efficient, but that's hard to do against these guys. It's hard. So you're going to need that help from other places, and he just didn't get enough of it. Michael Porter Jr. had a pretty good game, 20.6-13. That's about what, you know, you could expect from him. Aaron Gordon, you know, the opportunity is going to be harder for him. He's not a shooter. He's got to slash and get along the baseline and look at the length that's back there. It's hard. It's going to be harder for Aaron Gordon. So where does the difference come from? It comes from Jamal Murray. And I think Reggie Jackson maybe can give you a little bit more because it's got to be more to help Jokic out. And Murray is the guy you look at. I'm worried about his ability to really get loose in this series if he's not feeling right.
Murray yesterday, when speaking to the media, said he's made peace with the limitations he's going to have in this playoff run because of the injuries and is now just focused on how he can adjust his game to be effective. So that's the big question. I think one area he can be effective is with his floater. I think he realized that as the game went on, that Gobert is trying to stay home and protect the paint, protect the rim specifically with Aaron Gordon. So when you turn the corner, you got Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards with their length and their speed contesting and taking away the mid-range pull-up off of or the three-point pull-up off of pick and roll. But you can get downhill and get to your floater game right down the middle of the paint. It's not the easiest shot, but the Wolves don't give you easy shots. You're going to have to convert the medium shots, not super hard, but you're going to have to convert the medium ones. And I think the floater over Gobert is going to be one of those plays that is open. You talked about Jokic. To me, this is the big one. If Murray can't go, Jokic has a Herculean effort ahead of him. He had 32 points, 9 assists last game, but 11 of 25 shooting. I went through and looked at all of his shots. Some of these were heaves. Some of the three-pointers were like end of shot clock. He had to get a shot up. I think he took 3 threes in the last 2 minutes of the game. So outside of the three-point shooting, which, you know, he's about a 36% shooter, the shots you're talking about where he had to work, they're still makeable. And I think in this series, he's going to have to put his mind towards, I've got to make a lot of 7-foot jump hooks. One of his favorite shots, but usually you take like 3 or 4 of those a game. I think he's going to have to take like 10 a game, and he's going to have to convert those at a high clip. Denver scores really well when Gobert gets switched out onto one of Denver's shooters, because you just play through Jokic in the post and the rim protection's gone now. The help side rim protection's gone. When Gobert's on Jokic, it's difficult, but Jokic actually scored efficiently, you know, going up against Gobert. When Gobert's on is on Aaron Gordon, that's when the Wolves are perfectly in their defensive rhythm. And those are the shots where Yoke's going to have to make some really, really tough MVP caliber plays. And I honestly think the series is going to come down to how many of those he can make.
I think that's a good point. Gobert can't guard him one-on-one. Anytime he gets one-on-one coverage against Gobert, he gets the shot he wants. The one thing I think Jokic did, and when Jokic watches the film of himself, I think he's going to realize there were a number of shots. I don't know how many. He had it right on the initial move, and he didn't let go of the ball.
Yep, I agree.
And I don't know why. I don't know what he was expecting or anticipating when he came out of a spin, or he starts going into that, you know, banging in the chest 3 times, and then he looks like he's going to go to his jump hook, and he wouldn't. And I was like, shoot it, and he wouldn't. And then he would stop, plant, pivot, and he'd end up shooting like a lean back shot, or he'd kick it out. I think he overthought some of his post moves. They played him single coverage quite a bit. And when he gets single coverage, he gets a good shot for himself almost every single time that he wants it, as long as he doesn't go to one move too many. Because I thought he did that several times, and I think watching the film, he's going to realize it. Like, wow, right there, that was simple. ABC, shoot. I didn't have to go to that extra pivot and spin up and under type stuff that he did a couple of times when he didn't have to. So he can score on these guys. And the question for Minnesota is going to be, are you cool living with that? With Jokic kind of playing that way and scoring on jump hooks and up and unders and like short little lean back shots, and maybe he mixes in a couple of threes, as long as nobody else really hurts you. And I wonder if that's part of Minnesota's strategy, man, because I don't think that's a great formula for Denver, and in Jokic's mind, for him to take 25 shots and then Porter and Murray get 27 combined. I don't think that's an ideal way for them to play, but that's kind of what this defense is going to force him to do. And I agree with you, and I just said it this morning on the shows I did. I think you're going to get their best punch in Game 2, and I think that's going to mean Jokic is going to be dialed in as a scorer intent on making them pay, because he's the one guy that can win a one-on-one matchup anytime he gets one against anybody they have right now with the condition Murray's in, and that's not really describing Porter. That's not Aaron Gordon. That's not what they do. Jokic can. He can win any matchup, anytime, one-on-one. He can beat that matchup, and I think you're going to see him start to interpret that and read those situations and be very aggressive as a scorer.
100%. Teams got to punch early. I don't think it's a coincidence that the Wolves went on an 18-4 run to start this game and that the Nuggets responded with a 20-2 run, because I think this is going to be a series that has runs in it. Both teams score significantly better against cross matches than they do against their base defensive sets. So if you score, you get back and set your defense, you're more likely to get a stop, which means you're more likely to get a score in transition. So I think this is going to be a series where there are lots of big runs, lots of big runs throughout the course of the series. Now, here's one for you, though, that I keep wondering. So Christian Brown, maybe he does match up with, Anthony Edwards. Maybe that's a good guy to throw out there. Is it possible Denver will have to change their closing lineup in this series? Because with Rudy Gobert roaming off of Aaron Gordon, you know, that's tough. If you move Michael Porter to the 4 in those moments, all of a sudden that becomes an impossibility. Michael Porter is too good of a shooter. Denver scored almost every time Gobert got switched onto Porter. The only times they didn't score was when Michael Porter tried to ISO Gobert. That's not how you beat that defense. Just be a magnet. Suck Gobert out to the 3-point line and stand there, and you've done your job. But do you think there's a chance Denver has to change their closing lineup, either with Christian Brown replacing KCP or Christian Brown replacing Aaron Gordon and everybody changing their matchups?
Yeah, and then you just hope that you can, you know, contain them on the boards on the other end. But look, this is what a lot of teams did to Gobert when he was in Utah. This happened to Gobert because teams would go so small, he's not comfortable if he doesn't have, you know, that lane to roam and protect and any sort of action. His natural inclination is to flee back to the rim right? That's just what he does. That's who he is. And it became harder and harder for him in Utah as series went on to be on the floor when teams went small and teams had 4 3-point shooters on the court. So that's not a bad idea right there. You just wonder, you know, would that force Minnesota to take him off the court or play one big right, where he's only guarding Jokic and then they go smaller? Or do they decide to go with those bigs and then just try to absolutely beat you up at the rim on the other end of the floor with a much smaller team defensively? One thing that has to change clearly for any team in a game, much less a playoff game, the Denver Nuggets missed 40 shots. They got three of them back. Three.
Yep.
You can't – the margin for error against Minnesota is so small in your initial shot because they're so good defensively in that initial – you got to get something back. Like, that number has to go up. And I know they're big. I know it's hard. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. But that number has to be dramatically different. You can't have three offensive rebounds in a playoff game, man. It allows you virtually no margin for error offensively. You're going to get one trip every single time down the floor. Not good enough. So that's one area they've got to look at. Jokic had one, but primarily because he was scoring, trying to score so much. Like, that's when he's going to be taken out of the offensive rebounding mode for the most part, because it wasn't like he was missing layups. He was missing those short shots. You're not going to rebound your own shot a lot of times in that case. Aaron Gordon had one. Reggie Jackson had one. There's got to be opportunities for Michael Porter Jr. to get in there. Christian Brown, like, you'll be like a Josh Hart role where you're going every time. Come up with some of those loose balls. They need more opportunities with two possessions on the same trip to just increase their likelihood that they're going to score.
100% agree. If we, just to wrap this up, if we go to the other side, you know, areas that Minnesota can be better in game two, I do think that Jaden McDaniels, you know, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, these guys can make more of their shots. I think that Denver did a pretty good job of limiting the clean looks that those guys got, but nonetheless, 1 of 7, they could run a little bit hotter than that. But, and you dismissed this a little bit earlier, at least you didn't think it was a big deal, but I really am going to keep my eye on it. Murray's injury, I just don't think he can stay in front of Mike Conley. It's not like Mike Conley's De'Aaron Fox, but Murray's injury to me worries me, because there were a lot of just straight line blow bys on Murray, you know, in this last game. And that to me is one thing that I'm going to be looking for early in this game. Does Mike Conley see something in Murray that makes him think that's a point of attack that we didn't think coming into the series was going to be a point of attack, and now we can do it, scramble and get the defense moving? I think that's a pressure point the Wolves are going to try really hard to put on Denver in game two. And if it works, then all bets are off. That's a weakness that can be exploited on top of the things they already found in game one.
Yeah, look, I'll keep an eye on that. I don't think that's any sort of tipping point in this series. Mike Conley, you know, going against Jamal Murray. I really don't. So I'm very curious to see. Now, it's almost like now that it's like kind of like this public talking point for public consumption about Jamal Murray. I'm really curious to see what his approach is going to be at the start of the game in game two.
Yeah, I agree.
But you know what I mean? Because he's hearing all this noise. Everybody's kind of talking about this now as if he's some, you know, wounded animal out there. Let's see if he's got something else in store at the start of the game to get going. Because it wasn't like he was completely stationary. It was, you know, we're talking about an incremental difference for him, which is a big deal because he's not lightning quick anyway. That's not like who he is. So he needs whatever quickness he does have to get that separation, to get into his pull-ups and his lean back jumpers and the stuff he loves to hit. I'm very curious to see what his approach is at the start of game two. And if they can find, if he is not right defensively, are there ways that on possession by possession, you can find out, depending on what group Minnesota has on the court, find ways to maybe rest Jamal Murray a little bit more by guarding spot-up shooters and letting some other guys take the responsibility of guarding Edwards and Conley, and these guys that are coming off more ball screens.
My last thought on this is I'm just so impressed with Minnesota. I was impressed with them in round one because they looked poised. You get a young team that hasn't won a series yet, and you think, okay, what are they going to look like? Are they ready for the moment? They looked poised, and then in that series, you know, part of getting a sweep is not about being better than the other team. It's about being focused for all four games, even when there's no pressure on you. Them showing that in game four, that they could close that out, you know, and keep their foot on the gas pedal even when they had no pressure on them, was impressive to me. And that's why I don't think tonight is going to be one of those games where it's like, okay, we went in to get a split and we got it. I think they're a team that is locked in and looks at game two as another opportunity. So I think it's going to be a great, great game two here in Denver I do want to say
you just said that you were, you know, talking about them after the first round and you were very impressed by them. Listen, we do this show every 4 days a week. You started on this midseason. You were talking about Minnesota as being the team. Yep. You kept pointing to Minnesota as the team. Yep. That you're like, man, this is the one team that you worried about as a Denver fan. Like, man, you know, and they're much better now than they were then.
Yeah.
And so, oh, no so question. You, so to your credit, like, you identified this early on, man, like, looked up and down the Western Conference, the entire conference. This was the team that you repeatedly were referring to that could have been a threat to the Nuggets. We're going to find out how big of a threat. It's interesting. Right now, there's so much momentum in the talk around this series toward Minnesota. Denver can change that narrative really quickly. Really quickly.
They need to.
With an impressed, yeah, no doubt. They listen, I feel this way. If they lose the game, clearly, I don't know how they come back from that. Even if they win the game, but it takes like some late game heroics to win the game, I think that bodes really well for Minnesota. Like, what you want to see tonight out of the Nuggets is like in control with the 4 or 5 minutes to go, you know, yep. Where you're up 10 and you're controlling the game. And you felt like, okay, this was Denver's game. Like, you know, the whole way, this was their style. This was them. This is what they, you know, champions do to respond. That's what it looked like. The whole narrative will change going to Minnesota. Cause a lot of people are going to be like, well, Denver's going to go win one out of two road games. And now we're here. We are, we're going to be 2-2 with a best of three with Denver with home court. But obviously getting ahead of myself, that all has to change tonight. That narrative has to change tonight in the way Denver plays, in the way they react to some of the things that happened in game one, and how in control are they in the fourth quarter of this game?
Well, one of the reasons I believed in them is Tim Connelly was the architect of that team. And by the way, the Wolves fans, including the ones in this chat, were always clowning on me when I said 2 years ago, Tim Connelly is going to bring them something because he knows Denver better than anyone. He built a team, immediately started building a team with Rudy Gobert that was designed to make life difficult on Denver. And, you know, they're one game into the series and it's looking good so far. All right, let's take a break. On the other side, though, let's get into the game 7, Cavs versus Magic. And also, where do the Magic go from here now that they dropped that game? And then later on in the show, we're going to preview Knicks Pacers very briefly and talk about what we're looking for as that series begins. But first, I want to tell you guys about AG1. Not only does AG1 deliver your daily dose of vitamins, minerals, and prebiotics and more, but it's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. You just put one scoop, mix it in water every single day, once a day, and there you go. You get all the things you need, vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and all of that good stuff. If you have a habit of drinking coffee in the morning, what does it do for you? Does it give you that jolt? Does it make you feel tired midway through the day and then you need another cup? That's not the case with AG1. Try it out to help give you extra energy and make you feel like you're having a healthy and balanced start to your day. AG1 is the supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily, and that's why I'm excited to welcome them as our partner. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/allnba. That's drinkag1.com/allnba. Check it out. Also, this episode is brought to you by DraftKings Pick 6. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app and use code ALLNBA. Do you ever play that game of over-under with your friends? How many slices of pizza do you think you could eat in under 30 seconds? How fast do you think you can get this done, or how much can you get done in 30 minutes? If you have, you're going to love the Pick 6 game. It's a new fantasy game from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Here's how you play during the NBA playoffs. Pick between 2 and 6 players and choose if they'll have more or less of a certain stat, rebounds, points, assists, etc. Track your picks and play against each other for a shot to win huge cash prizes. It's actually a super fun game, very easy to use. You could go tonight and say, okay, I think Jokic's going to get points. I think Anthony Edwards going to get points. And I think Rudy Gobert's going to get rebounds. You take the over on those three, and that's your setup. And then you're just betting. It's almost, you know, in some ways like a parlay. So download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app and use code ALLNBA for a shot at huge cash prizes. That's code ALLNBA only on DraftKings Pick 6. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 and over in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date list of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
All right, back here, segment 2 of the All-NBA show. Adam Mattes and Tim Legler. Throw us a like if you're watching it live, and if you're joining us a little bit late, leave us a comment below. Let us know what you think about the show. If you have any questions about a series, drop them in there as well. We had a Game 7 yesterday, Legs, and it was the Cavs and the Magic. So no two teams played well at the same time. And in this one, so they just traded blows, right? Every home team had the good game. Well, in this one, the script finally flipped. The Orlando Magic dominated the first half, and they build a 19-point lead. You thought, oh, my God, is this it? Are the Magic going to get it done? Completely collapsed in the third quarter. Got outscored 33-15. Donovan Mitchell started to take over, and then down the stretch, they closed this out as the Orlando Magic did what they did in every loss in this playoffs, which is go ice cold, including Franz Wagner, my guy, 1 of 15. Jalen Suggs, my guy, 2 of 13. Those two guys could not throw the ball in, and that was the difference. What do you make of this series now that it's concluded, Legs?
Well, interesting series from the standpoint, you know, listen, you expect it's in some series a road team's going to win. They're going to figure out a way, be in a game in the fourth quarter and win the game. Wasn't really the case here. Held home court all the way through. At the end of the day, the guard play of Cleveland was the difference. And Donovan Mitchell in particular. Here's what I was impressed with Donovan Mitchell in this game in particular. And I go back to some of his playoff, I don't call them failures, but, you know, teams he was on in Utah that weren't able to really advance. He tended to rely much more on the deep shot when he was in Utah, and the free throw numbers were diminished. There was a series he played against the Clippers, I think about 4 years ago, 3-4 years ago, that they lost in 6 games. And I think the differential in that series, threes to free throws, was 80 to 35. 80 threes to 35 free throws. He had, I think, 5 games in the 6-game series. He took 12 or more three-point attempts in every game. And that was kind of like where he was comfortable, trying to close matters and trying to – that wasn't the case yesterday. And, in fact, if you look at throughout this entire series, three-point numbers and free throw numbers, this is what it's supposed to look like when you're trying to close out a hard-fought series. It's just higher percentage shots getting into the paint – getting closer to the rim, higher efficiency, less pull-up contested deep shots. And I thought that's what he did in this game. He took 17 free throws, only 8 threes. Great ratio for him. Throughout the series, the three-point attempts, only one time in this series did he take double-digit three-point attempts. I think he altered his game to what was presented to him against this team. He knew that he could get by guys with those wide shoulders, he could get into or a point where he was level with defenders and then jump inside the foul line, create the contact, get in the air, get to the line or get an and one. And I felt like he adapted nicely and controlled the game almost more as a power player in this game with the number of times he was at the rim or at the foul line or shooting those little one-legged floaters he likes to shoot. It was more like playing in the paint like a power player than he was relying on making tough jump shots in a game 7, which are always hard, particularly against a really good defensive team that's got length in the perimeter. So I give him a lot of credit. He closed this deal the way that he had to. This is what they brought him in there to do. And you look at what he did over the last 2 games. He was sensational, even though one of those was a 50-point loss. He followed it up with a huge game 7. It wasn't the greatest shooting performance, but he supplemented it with all those trips to the line.
And to your point, they win that battle 50-28 points in the paint. And that's exactly what you have to do is get to the rim in these games. Don't just count on it. So I think that's a great point. And by the way, both teams all series long struggled with that because of the rim protection that both teams have. That was a pain point. So for it to be such a point for Donovan Mitchell to get there, you're right. That's a big deal.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And then on the other side, the opposite was true. If you look at Jalen Suggs' shot chart, almost all of it was three-pointers. So I think that's a really astute observation. All right, what the other thing here, though, is, you know, so the Cavs move on. We think they're going to have a tough time, obviously, with Boston in the next round. Don't want to count them out. We'll talk about that on tomorrow's show as we get ready for that game coming up on Wednesday. But the Orlando Magic season now comes to an end, and they're such an interesting one because at one point, I believe they climbed as high as the 2 seed late in the year for like a day or two and then fell down to the 5 seed. But they had a very good year. But teams do this sometimes, Legs, where they have a very good year and you think, okay, we're on the right track. But I think that Orlando is on the right track but needs a major piece added to it. I don't think this is a give this group another year and they're going to be better next year. I think it's like we've seen what this group, where this is headed, and now you have to alter course a little bit. Do you agree with that? And if so, what is a piece, what type of player is it that they need to add to this roster?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm really impressed with the season that they had, really impressed even with what they did in this series. If I'm looking at the Magic, though, it's clear to me that they need a point guard. You look at the guards that played in this game for them, and this is pretty much all season, and Anthony Black hasn't even been playing, but he was included in the regular season. Harris, Suggs, Fultz, Cole Anthony, none of those guys are natural point guards. Okay, in fact, none of those guys this year, the four guards that play primarily in the rotation, none of those guys had an assist average that starts with the number 3. Right? Okay, so all four of those guys, if you add up their playmaking, it adds up to the elite guys in this league collectively, the Jokic's and the Lucas of the world and Tyrese Halliburton's, like the guys that are facilitating offense, right, and organizing. Now, granted, all three of those guys, particularly Jokic and Luka, they're also big-time scorers, and they're two of the best players in this league. I get that. I'm not saying you got to add that, but you need somebody that's more of a natural lead guard that understands how to create easier shots. This is the only team in the league. I believe I said this about a month ago, and I think it held true. I didn't look down up and down every team before I make this statement, but I think it's true. They're the only team in the league whose two top scorers are 6'10 and up. The only team in the league. And they're both forwards. And look, Banchero is a stud. Franz Wagner is a really good player. So I like both of those guys. Now, obviously, Wagner really struggled yesterday. He looks like he lost his confidence entirely. Suggs didn't help out. So your next two best players go 3 for 28. You're not winning. I don't care who you are. No team is winning a game when that happens. I like Wagner and love Banchero. Really like Wagner. It's a great place to start. They're really creative, good ball handling forwards. But that's different than being a facilitator and a lead guard and a guy that sets the table. That's not what they do. And none of their guards really do that well. And I'm not saying it's easy to get. You're not going to go get an all-star caliber point guard like this because if a team has a guy like that, they're not giving him up. But you have to be able – imagine even if a team like this just had a guy that had the point guard skills of a Derek White or a Drew Holiday. Just like that level player. That's what I'm saying. Somebody who's been a lead guard like their whole life, and this is what they've done. And to help take some of the ball handling off the plate of Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero. For me, that's the most obvious place because I love their defense. I love the two young forwards. They've got length. They could certainly use some shooting. Every team needs some shooting in this league. But more than anything else, I think they need a natural point guard, man. We're getting 6, 7, 8 assists on a night, 10 assists is like a natural thing for them because of the way they're reading the floor. I don't think it's natural for any of their guards. And I think that to me is an area of need.
So I look at it and I think that their roster has some overlap. And, you know, when you start building young prospects, you don't know who's going to hit and who's not. But you've got Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero, as you mentioned, two forwards. And then you've got Jonathan Isaac, who I love, but, you know, he hasn't been healthy. He's got one more year on his deal. How much can you bet on him being like a core long-term piece? And then you have Wendell Carter, who's a big. You've got Mo Wagner, who I think is a very good backup big. Those guys are all front court players. Then when you go to the guards, to your point, you don't have point guards and you don't have shooters. You've got Jalen Suggs, who I love. You've got Gary Harris expiring, who I like. Anthony Black, I like as a prospect, but I'm not sure if he's going to provide the spacing and the point guard play. He's a good defensive player. So I look at them and I think they are a team that has to make some consolidation moves because they have guys in the same spots. Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, I think, okay, those guys are probably untouchable. You love what you got there. Jonathan Isaac might be a tradable piece because of how good he is and because do you want to bet long-term on his health or do you want to try to cash him in now for something better? I think Wendell Carter, similar thing. He's got two more years left on his deal. Do they need the depth at that spot? And then, so to your point, yes, point guard, but I actually think shooting is as important as a point guard. Franz Wagner's a good player, and I think he'll look a lot better if you give him better spacing because he is a guy that's a connector and can get the ball moving and make the swing passes and all that stuff. But there's no one to swing the ball to. There's nobody you're trying to find and the paint is packed. So I think shooting is as important as the point guard play, but I think they have the assets to find that if they, and the cap space, by the way, to find that if they wanted to go that direction.
No, I agree with you. And you know, they're not that far away. And I think when you look at the Eastern Conference, I think there's a greater window of opportunity here than people anticipated for this group this soon. And it has to do a lot with just the landscape of the East, man. And some of it was injuries. Some of it was looking forward to some of these teams you thought were going to be at the top of the Eastern Conference. You wonder how they're going to be able to maintain that and stay there because I don't think the injury bug is going to be something that's going to lessen now with some of these guys because they're getting older. And so I think there's an opportunity for the Magic. With especially as young as they are, they're close. And it's not like you need wholesale, you know, roster turnover because you have the guy to build around. Banchero is the real deal. You have a legit big time perennial all-star caliber player. And so when that's first. You have to have that, or you're nowhere in this league. They have that guy, and then they've got some nice supplemental piece. Suggs is one of the best on the ball defenders in the league, and he can give you know, some scoring bursts. I don't think he's ever going to be a really consistent scorer or shooter, but you absolutely need him to win. He's a winner, and he does things that very few players in this league want to do. So you need to add some of the skill component to this team. You need to add a big-time shooter. You need to add a guy that can handle the ball and facilitate and make reads and make people better. And where do they get that from? That's why, you know, there are people sitting in those big offices in Orlando that get paid a lot of money. I don't, so I'm not going to do their job for them.
What do you think of Jonathan Isaac here? I mean, he's probably, I don't know, $17.5 million he's owed next year on an expiring. I love his game. He played 58 games this year. Prior to that, he played 11 in three seasons. He's obviously maybe number one injury concern in all of the NBA. If you talked about players who are injury concerns, he might be number one. And if I'm Orlando, I look at it and I go, are we winning a title next year? Unless you have a Paul, like I've seen Paul George rumored, and you know, unless you have some big moves, I think this is still a process where you're like, okay, we're probably a couple years away. We just want to build on this. So I look at Jonathan Isaac, and as much as I love him, that might be a piece you might be able to talk a team into, especially at the trade deadline next year, and say, hey, you've only got to survive the injury bug for 2 months. Jonathan Isaac's a major impact defensive wing for a title contender. That might be a guy that if he can stay healthy until February next year, he's a huge, every contender in the NBA would look at him and say, I wonder if we could use him.
Completely agree. He's an absolute difference maker for the teams you're talking about in that category of, hey, we're close. We need to round out the fringe roster spots around their best players and have a guy that you can use for 15 to 20 minutes a night that is that impactful defensively with that kind of length. So I agree with you. I think a lot of teams would be interested in Jonathan Isaac. The only drawback is, you know, you look at him, it's hard to believe. He's 26 years old. And most guys that come out that are the sixth pick in the draft, they're 19 years old when they come out. By now, they've got 500 games under their belt. He's got 200. He's got 200. Yeah. So I still think, you know, is there a component there? Even though he played 58 this year, okay, is there still a component? Because think about that. We're praising him for 58. That's still 24 games short of a full season. Okay. Yeah. But by his standards, you're like, hey man, he was available. So that's why we're like talking about it. But do teams look at that as like, man, okay, yeah, he's an interesting piece, but is the reliability factor going to be there? But I look, he's got things that are just innate that he brings to the table. As soon as he steps on the court, you're going to be better on that end of the floor. And a lot of teams are looking for that.
100%.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
All right, let's move on to tonight's game. The Knicks and the Pacers series begins game one tonight. The other two second round series begin tomorrow, so we'll talk about them on tomorrow's show. But tonight, Knicks, Pacers, what are you looking for in game one?
Well, all right, I think this is going to be, you know, who can impose their style clearly is a big part of this. The biggest factor I'm looking for in this game one is how do the Pacers compete on their own defensive glass? It was an enormous factor in the first round against the Sixers with the number of second shot opportunities the Knicks got repeatedly. And it's not one guy. It's a bunch of guys. It's Hartenstein. It's Robinson. It's Josh Hart. It's Ananobi. It's Precious Achiuwa when he was on the floor. It's all of those guys. And this is a problem for Indiana. This is a weakness for their team. And the reason I think it's important is if you've got to commit all those extra bodies, because it's going to be a collective group effort to gang rebound in this series. If that's the case, look at your starting point to run. If you've got five guys below your own foul line in the paint, because everybody's got to chip and help and bump, and you can't turn your head and watch the flight of the ball because the Knicks, they come flying in from everywhere trying to crash the glass. So you've got, it takes everybody, all hands on deck. And if that's the case, how hard is it going to be for Indiana to establish early pace? Because I think the deeper you get into possessions in the shot clock, the more of an advantage that it's going to be for the Knicks. Because the way the games are called, more contacts allowed in the second half of the shot clock, you're able to get into guys. And the deeper you get into the clock, the less likely you're going to take a shot that's going to be a quality shot. They need to play early, advance the ball, get it moving through the air, get the Knicks retreating defensively. How do you do that without securing the defensive board or committing five guys to the paint? I think it's one of the biggest components of the series, and that's what I'm going to be looking for in the first half of game one. How do the Pacers acquit themselves in that area?
These games were kind of wild in the regular season, and then one of them was early in the year. If you remember, Tyrese Haliburton had 23 assists. They scored 140 points in that game and made 23 three-pointers. They had another game later in the year that was kind of similar in that it was like 130 or something like that. And then they had one defensive battle, and that was the one the Knicks won. So I think that is a big piece of this, is just what's the pace, what's the tempo. And the biggest thing with pace and tempo oftentimes is when you grab offensive rebounds, as the Knicks are very good at, they did it a lot in that first round in moments that changed the game and won the game for him. When you do that, you take away the fast break because now you need to put more energy on securing the rebound. Vice versa, if Indiana is killing them in transition, it takes pressure away from the offensive rebound because now the Knicks are worried about getting back and stopping them on the break. So to me, that's why game one of this series in particular is so fun, is because there is a style fight on the boards and the breaks, and I'm curious to see who wins it. What else you got?
I think a massive X factor in this series is Miles Turner. He's going to have a big series. He did in the last series, averaged 19 points a game, 44% from the three-point line, making three a game from out there. You know, and he's a big difference maker defensively, clearly on the defensive glass and rim protection against the Knicks. He's going to be important in that area. But I think his offense is critical in this series because I think the Knicks are going to have a pretty effective game plan against Halliburton. And they've got guys that have a lot of want to on him. Yeah. So Halliburton is going to have moments in this series, probably where strings together some shots. He's clearly going to find guys. We're going to laud him for that. I don't know that he's going to have a huge scoring series. So where's it going to come from? Siakam and Turner are the two guys. And then you need X factor type guys. Like you're going to need one, like, outburst probably out of Nesmith. You're going to need Nembhard to have a spot, but to consistency from night to night, you certainly expect to get that out of Siakam. That's why you got him. That's why he's an all-star. Miles Turner is the key. Miles Turner has to give them 20 points a game in this series. He's going to get looks. He's got to shoot a high percentage. He's got to be ready for that moment and ready for that spot. And it forces the Knicks to rethink some of the ways in which they are going to clog the paint against Halliburton and some of these guys, Siakam too, if Miles Turner's knocking down three-point shots. So I think he is critical element. If he has quiet nights, I don't know the Pacers can win those games.
How many points does the winning team have tonight? Because I think that tells you who you think is going to win this series. If you think it's going to be a lot of scoring, then you might think Pacers. If you think it's low, you probably think Knicks.
That's a good indicator. I think as the series goes, you're going to be able to have a better chance in adjusting to the Pacers' pace. Would not be surprised if early the Pacers get out and they play their style a little bit tonight. So maybe the score gets up a little bit, but as the series goes on, I think that's when the Knicks defense can start to be more prepared for that and grind them down a little bit. And ultimately, I think the physicality of the Knicks and the way they guard and how these games are being officiated, I think that lends itself, you know, to the Knicks being able to move on. But I think this is going to be a long series. I think it's going to be a really entertaining series. I think it's going to have drama in the fourth quarter. I do not see the Knicks running away from this team. I think these are going to be close games, hard-fought games. You'll probably get maybe one or two higher-scoring games that'll favor the Pacers, and you'll probably get four or five lower-scoring games that's going to favor the Knicks. I wouldn't be surprised if this went seven games or six really hard-fought games. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, most people are going to have to favor the Knicks, and I do too.
I love that one. All right, cue that outro music there, Emma. Great stuff today, Legs. A nice full show. The games gave us something to talk about, which always makes it easier. We do have one super chat from Jay Money. What's he say here? Raptors fan, and I don't know who to vote for in Knicks and Pacers series. It's going to be a bittersweet watch. That's right. You've got OG Anunoby. You've got Pascal Siakam.
Siakam, oh, man. And they're going to be going up against each other quite a bit. That'll be the matchup. OG's going to get Siakam quite a bit in this series, so that'll be interesting. A couple friends and old teammates going at it.
I didn't even think of that dynamic, but it actually is a really fun one. Those two guys guarding each other a little bit. So that should be a great one. Any final thoughts, Legs?
No, man. I think we're going to know a lot more about how these playoffs are going to go after tonight. This is a huge night, as is tomorrow night. But tonight is a huge night for these NBA playoffs to find out what this Denver-Minnesota series is going to look like going forward and give us a real indication of how these two styles play out in the Knicks-Pacers series.
We got a great week of hoops ahead. Games every night. We're going to be talking about them, obviously, every day on this show. Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday this week. Hit that like button for us on the way out, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Y'all silly like the mayor.